It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. Of course, I'm your host, Scotty Myers. This is a good week to join us. Not only we got all kinds of geek news, but later in the show, I get to chat with the legendary Todd McFarlane. So we're going to talk all things Spawn, a little bit of Batman. We'll get into some other stuff as well. So that's later in the show. Make sure you're following us on social media. The Scotty Myers Show on Facebook and Instagram, at Scotty Myers on Twitter. So let's get into the geek news for the week before we chat with Todd. We'll start with Marvel and lots of Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage news taking place out there. They did some test screenings, and apparently they went really well. I'm always hesitant about test screenings, though, because we've heard, you know, how great other movies have done in test screenings in the past, and then when they hit theaters, the reaction is not as good. But the big news was, not only did people like the movie, the after credit scene is driving fans crazy, like in a good way. People were like almost to the point where some people seem more excited by the after credit scene than the movie itself. So obviously the first thing that comes to mind is Spider-Man, right? You know, Spider-Man shows up in the after credit scene. Makes sense. Sony is definitely going to put them together at some point, but do they do it this early, right? Do they do it while Spidey is still tied up in the MCU as well? I think Sony ideally wants to finish up their deal with Disney, pull Spider-Man out of the MCU, and just have him live in the Spideyverse over at Sony all on their own. So let's just say for a second, it's not Spider-Man. Who could it be? Well, Morbius is a really good guess, considering that movie is done and on the way. So having Jared Leto show up as the living vampire, that would make a lot of sense and kind of start the promotion for that film. So that, if we're taking Spider-Man out of the equation, that's my top guess. That's my absolute top guess. Second one would be Kraven the Hunter. You know, Sony cast Aaron Taylor-Johnson as Kraven, I don't even remember how long ago now, and everybody forgot about it. This is a character that people have been clamoring to see on the big screen, and we know who's going to play him, and yet it's kind of gone by the wayside and a bit of forgotten news. So it could be that as well. I think either of those would get fans excited. Morbius, maybe not as much as Kraven, and definitely not as much as Spider-Man. It could also just be a tease of what's going to happen to Carnage after the movie, right? Like, you're going to assume Venom will defeat Carnage, but then where does Carnage go from there? So maybe it's just a really badass tease for the future of Carnage. I don't think fans would go that apeshit for that. I think they'd be like, oh, it's really cool, but not like, oh man, the after, like, you got to stay till the end. That last credit scene, like, I saw a few tweets of like, that last credit scene, if you miss it, you're going to regret it, blah, blah, blah. So it's really driving people into a frenzy about that. So when you go see Let There Be Carnage, don't forget, stay till the end. You'll regret it otherwise. My money is actually on Kraven. That's kind of where my money is right now. I just think it's a little too early for Spider-Man, although that would be badass. And as I said, you know, Sony is going to get them together. And even the director of Venom, Let There Be Carnage, Andy Serkis, confirmed that. You know, he was giving an answer to an interview and he said, well, I don't know. He's kind of joking and dodging it. And then he went, no, of course they're going to meet up. Like, that's the plan. And he said he felt comfortable confirming that because he goes, of course. Like, anybody that doesn't think that's going to happen is living in a dream world. It's definitely going to happen. So we're definitely going to get Venom and Spidey together. Who knows when, who knows where, but that is coming. Speaking of things that could be coming, they had the What If episode that was Marvel Zombies, right? And I talked about it a bit last week about how I was a little let down by it just because I wanted more zombies. I could be getting that. Rumors are out there that Marvel and Disney could be working on a live action Marvel Zombies movie. I take these reports with a giant grain of salt. And the reason why I say that is animated zombies are one thing, right? And you got to remember, Marvel stuff is very family friendly. Like even that Marvel Zombies What If episode, while it pushed the barrier, it didn't get as dark as the comics, and it definitely didn't get as dark as a zombie movie would. So when I think of a live action, you know, Marvel Zombies project, do kids want to go to the theaters and see Captain America turn into a flesh-eating zombie, blood, gore, all that kind of stuff? I mean, maybe they do. I just think the suits are going to look at it and go, eh, I don't think. What I would be more inclined to believe is that we're going to see more animated Marvel zombie stuff on Disney Plus. It lets the market kind of control itself. Parents are involved, you know, like, yes, parents are involved taking their kids to the theater as well, but you can do a lot more in animation and get away with it than you can in live action and get away with it. So I think there's a future for Marvel Zombies, but I do think it's animated and I do think it's on Disney Plus. And you can still make the money off the toys with the animated ones, right? Like that's at the end of the day, part of why you would want to do this project is just to sell more toys. For the kids that already have every Iron Man figure out there, they don't have zombie Iron Man. There's another one they have to go buy. So that's where I think it'll land. I think these rumors of it going to the theater are just hopeful people after that What If episode. And I'm sure it's been discussed. I'm sure that conversation has been had in some higher up office at Marvel and Disney. I just don't see it happening at the end of the day. And speaking of stuff on Disney Plus, we still have a few weeks of What If, but they dropped the trailer for the next Marvel show that's hitting Disney Plus. It's Hawkeye. I think I'm in the minority on this one, but my God, I hated that trailer. Like, I've never been a huge fan of Hawkeye, and especially the portrayal of Hawkeye in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's borderline useless. So to have his own show seems pointless. I know he's passing the torch in this show. So hopefully that will lead to a better rendition of Hawkeye going forward. But man, that the trailer just, all the things, if you listen to this podcast, you know, regularly, you know the things that bug me about what Marvel's doing, right? And especially is the jokiness. And this whole trailer was one giant tongue-in-cheek joke. And it just drove me nuts. It was painful for me to get through the 2 minutes. I can't imagine a half hour of it. I will try, because sometimes trailers are misleading. So I will give it a go when it's released on Disney Plus. But I do not have high expectations for the Hawkeye series whatsoever. Really, that trailer was cringeworthy in my world. Like I say, I know there's a bunch of fans that are flipping out over it. Maybe I'm in the minority on this one, but to me, hot garbage. Moving on to Star Wars, Quantic Dream, the video game development host behind Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls, done a bunch of other games as well. Rumors are floating out there. They could be working on a Star Wars game, which would be very interesting. If you haven't played anything from Quantic Dream, their games are very narrative heavy. It really is playing an interactive movie or an interactive graphic novel. It's not so much a game as it is you're in a story making decisions and going along with the story. So I would love to see what they would do in Star Wars. You know, what is this tale they're going to tell? What are the main characters going to be? I think there's a lot of room for that to be excellent. It's also going to, based on their previous work, probably a very slow moving game, but enjoyable nonetheless. Right now it's only rumors, but as I always say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's probably at least some conversations being had right now between Lucasfilm's game department and Quantic Dream. Mandalorian, it had a ton of Emmy nominations and it won a ton of Emmys. Congratulations to The Mandalorian and all involved with season 2. It was fantastic, as we all know. I think it walked away with 6 Emmys in total. A lot of technical stuff, which it definitely deserves. So congrats to everyone involved with The Mandalorian. Very much looking forward to season 3. And this one's kind of a bit of Star Wars news, a bit of Disney news. And I'm kind of surprised this happened, in all honesty. Rise of the Resistance at Star Wars has been the most popular ride pretty much in the entire parks. And it used to have this virtual queue system. basically what they did was you had to be in Hollywood Studios like whenever it opened. If it opened at 8 a.m., you had to be there at 8 a.m. You got on your Disney app, you clicked in for the virtual queue, and you were assigned a boarding party. And it said, okay, you're boarding party number 99. Come back between this time and this time, and you'll get in line and get on the ride. I actually found that system worked really, really well because it allowed you, you know, super popular ride. It allowed you to kind of be in line, but still go and do other things in the park. When my wife and I did it, we actually were like, oh, we got time. We hopped over to Epcot to have dinner, and then we're finishing up dinner, and I'm like, oh shit, our boarding party's going, run! And then we had to hustle it to Hollywood Studios to make our boarding party time. But again, it allowed us to go and do a bunch of other things, and we knew, okay, this ride that we want to go on, we're going to get to go on later. They're ditching the virtual queue, and they're just going to go to a regular standby line right now. And I find that fascinating. Now, if you've read any reports right now on attendance at Disney parks, it is super low right now. September is usually a slower time of the year, but this is exceptionally slow. And people are wondering if it's still COVID related, like how the numbers are in Florida. I think that plays into it. But I also think, you know, as I record this, we're basically 2 weeks away from the 50th anniversary of Magic Kingdom and a bunch of stuff happening, a bunch of new rides opening, a bunch of new shows, new fireworks, you know, new this, new that, new this, new that. So I just think if you're a family and you're planning your big Disney vacation, well, right now, if you were looking, going, shit, there's like no lineups. I was looking on my app the other day. You can walk on some pretty popular rides. But if you were planning that kind of, you know, once a year, once every couple of years, maybe once in a lifetime trip, would you go now so close to the 50th anniversary, or would you wait until after October 1st so that you will be there for part of the 18-month 50th anniversary celebration? I mean, I think that's a no-brainer. I think if you were going to go, you're going to be like, fuck it, let's wait until after the 50th anniversary kicks off. So I fully expect these super low crowds that are in Disney right now to climb back up to beyond normal capacity in October. I think they're going to be busier in October than they've been in years. And so when I see this move of ditching this virtual queue right now, it makes me wonder if it was a wise decision, because the lineups for Rise of the Resistance are going to be insane. It's worth the wait, but still, it's going to be insane. Switching over to DC, Zack Snyder's Justice League was released physically on Blu-ray, DVD, 4K Ultra, all that kind of stuff. And it dominated the first week of physical sales. Like, nothing was even close to it. It was selling out in a lot of locations. And that does not surprise me. Snyderverse proponents were, you know, crowing about this on social media. You know, basically saying, like, this shows that there is demand for the continuation of the Snyderverse. And I'm not saying it doesn't. I just think there was so much made about this movie, and it is fantastic. Like, don't get me wrong, it's amazing, but I definitely don't know if Warner Brothers and DC, I just don't know where their head is at. They did no promotion for the home video release, for the home release of Zack Snyder's Justice League. I really think there's a lot of suits, rightly or wrongly, in Warner Brothers that just want to put this behind them, and they want to move forward. And this was kind of the last step of it, was getting it out there physically for people to buy it. Great way for them to make money off of it. And now they'll kind of move forward with, you know, the other projects that are coming down the pipe, like The Flash and Black Adam and all that kind of stuff. I was bummed. I wanted a Steelbook version of it and I couldn't get one. Because I love the movie. I love Snyder's version of Justice League. I've said it on here. I have issues with Snyder's verse. Like, the universe that Zack Snyder built for DC, I have issues with it. I'm not necessarily as fervent as some other people to see that continue. But I think Zack's a gifted filmmaker. If they announced at DC Fandom that Zack Snyder was going to make another DC Comics film, I would be excited about it. It just, there, as a fan, there are certain things, certain decisions that he made that I'm just not 100% on board with. They could be fixed. You know, but so I'm kind of agnostic with the, you know, restore the Snyderverse. I'm kind of like, well, if you want to, cool, I'm along for the ride. If you don't, cool, I'm along for the ride. I like the characters more than I like any one director. And I think that's where I sit. You know, if you're going to give me Batman, if you're going to give me, you know, like when I look at Black Adam and I'm going to have a live action Dr. Fate, are you kidding me? You know, if I'm going to get that stuff, I'm super happy. As long as it turns out good, I'm super happy. So moving on, Batwoman season 3, they released a trailer. Trailer looked good. Actually thought the trailer looked a little bit better than season 2. I actually feel like maybe the characters feel a bit more in place going into season 3. So I was impressed by the trailer for that. We haven't even seen the Batman yet. You know, the Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson film. We're going to get our second trailer coming up at DC Fandom October 16th. But word is they're already spinning off another show out of it. There was a Gotham police show that they're going to spin off out of it. Now, apparently, we're going to get a Penguin TV show. Although when I read the first report of this, they said they hadn't signed Colin Farrell yet to play Penguin, which, again, is one of those things of like, don't go announcing the show until you've, you know, got everything signed, sealed, and delivered. I have a feeling they probably did, just that hasn't leaked out. But supposedly the show will kind of show his rise in the Gotham underworld. So it could be an interesting show. Kind of feels a little bit like it's been done, both of these spinoffs. When you looked at the, you know, the Gotham TV show, I feel like both of these story threads were covered there, but not in this universe. So we'll get them in this universe. Injustice 3, the video game that we're all anxiously waiting, or at least I am, the title has leaked. And it's an interesting one because it harkens back to the first game. The Injustice 3 title, supposedly, is God's Will Fall. Now, if you go back to Injustice, the subtitle of that was God's Among Us. Injustice 2 had no subtitle. So interesting. If that is the actual title for Injustice 3, nice reference to the first game, and kind of makes me wonder where the story is going to go. You know, are we talking like death of Superman in this one? What, you know, what are we talking about here when we talk about these gods of DC heroes? Like, who's going to fall? Very interesting. DC Fandom, they had like, so they've got promos. They're doing stuff every Friday to help build excitement for DC Fandom. And they had a little promo on Batman, and it gave us a new look at Catwoman. The look, the Catwoman from the upcoming The Batman film, the look was very basic. I'm hoping that's an early on look in the film. You know, maybe she develops into more of the kind of Catwoman that we know. It didn't look bad. It just didn't knock my socks off. You know, I'm hoping that we get more Catwoman-y. Because even Nolan's Catwoman, barely. She had to have the goggles on and flip them up to look like she had cat ears. So, you know, it's the one thing that recently they've been avoiding is just giving us a Catwoman that looks like Catwoman. And I'm not, you know, there's plenty you can draw from, right? Like, you know, but there's a ton of great artists that have done great work. I'm not saying necessarily kind of like the purple suit and knee-high boots, but I'm not opposed to that either. If somebody wants to do that and harken back to that comic book look, it wasn't a bad look for Catwoman. And some, I pray she has a whip in this film. I really, really hope so. As I record this today, it's September 18th. And today is Batman Day. So I wanted to take a second and just talk a little bit about Batman, the character, and kind of how it's impacted my life. Batman has had a reach, I think, in a lot of people's lives. For me, my earliest memories of comics were Batman. I'm sure I was reading other stuff at the time, but I mean, I have memories of going on car rides. You know, my dad used to like to go on drives. On a Sunday, just, well, we're just going for a drive. People don't really do that anymore. But and I used to just grab comics and get in the back and read in the car. And those are some of my earliest comic book memories. And they're Batman. It's like, what was I reading? I was reading Batman. And, you know, and then as my life progressed and my father passed away at a young age, I turned to Batman. You know, I turned to the character that lost his parents at a young age. And yeah, it's a fictional character, but I was kind of like, no, you know what? I need the strength of that character. I need kind of, you know, the little bit of like, if Bruce Wayne can move past it and continue on, so can I. And so definitely, you know, needed that after my father passed away. And then it's just, he's been a character that's been a kind of watermark character for me. When I think of some of the best times I've had going to the movies, it's been Batman. When I think of some of the best video games I've ever played, it's been Batman. Some of the best stories I've ever read, they've been Batman. And he's been a character that has been with me my entire life. And I don't ever see him leaving my life. You know, he's just one of those characters. I always find a little bit of motivation in a weird way. For like, I have a Batman shirt I wear to the gym, and there'll be times I'm going through a tough workout and I look in the mirror and I see that bat symbol and I go, you got to keep going. Maybe a psychiatrist could have a field day with that. Maybe not. It just basically, to me, is just a small taste of what that character means for me. If you would love to share what Batman means to you, I'd love to hear it. Again, Scotty Mars Show, Facebook, Instagram, at Scotty Mars on Twitter. So a couple of days before I recorded this, I got to catch up with the legendary Todd McFarlane to talk Spawn, especially the new one, Gunslinger Spawn, which if you haven't heard of, listen to the way he talks about this character. Sounds amazingly badass. And we got into some other stuff as well. Batman, dealing with rejection, collectibles. There's a lot that we covered, and I could have covered so much more. So have a listen. Here I am chatting with the one and only Todd McFarlane. So first off, I want to get into Gunslinger Spawn, obviously, because that's going to be massive. You're launching a new character. You've kind of relaunched the Spawn universe. Does that end up bringing back feelings for you, like going back to when you first launched Spawn?
Not the same. Time has passed, almost 30 years. So your reasonings and rationale are a bit different. When you're younger, it's about sort of peacocking a little bit and showing people that you can do it and sticking your chest out and beating it from time to time. And going, look at that, I accomplished it. As I've gotten older, then the success is almost a necessity to be able to move to whatever your next planned event is. So I don't spend a lot of time enjoying it or gloating about it, because I just go, okay, good. we that one worked. Now let's go to the next step, right? I've got to put out Spawn's universe, it's got to work, and if it works, they'll buy some King Spawn. If that works, then they'll have 2 points of data, and then one Gunslinger to make it easier, and so it just becomes almost sort of more methodical and a little more mature. I hate using that word for me, because I don't like acting that way too much, but it's good to know that what you're doing is working, but not for the same reasons as when you were a kid.
So. That makes sense. Although I will say, my therapist always says, when you accomplish something, do take time to stop and kind of bask in it for a minute. So I will pass that along to you.
Well, I took about an hour, right? So it was like, we got the big order, you know, cause on Mondays they tell us what the print run's got to be, cause we have to give it to the printers. And, a couple of people who work hard for me in the office, I go and tell them, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is great, great. And then I remember even on Kingspawn that, you know, set a record that I had about 1 hour, and then I had to get to the script of the original Spawn book because it was coming out the following week. So I had like 1 hour to enjoy it. Now, like, okay, get back to work, Todd. You got deadlines.
Yeah. and I saw you said in a previous interview, you said that Gunslinger Spawn makes Spawn look like a Boy Scout. I'm not sure how that is possible. Can you shed some light on that?
Because Spawn's got a lot of power, so he can. It's easy for him to sort of wield it. What we're going to show is that In the upcoming book, all Spawns are not created equal, right? They don't have the same powers. They don't have the same resilience. They don't have the same strength. And so we're going to see that Gunslinger can't just sort of wave his hands and have magical powers and win the day. He's going to have to really earn it. And because of that, he's going to have to work way harder. And because of that, he might have to get just a little more nasty in his attitude towards it. And then I'm also going to show that this guy doesn't need guns. You know, I mean, that's the easy sort of crutch for me to use, is that he's got his guns, but I'm going to show that he doesn't even need a gun. I can go for, if I have to, literally, I can go a year with not putting a gun in his hand. He'll still do a lot of damage. He figured out when he was living in those Western times, he lived near the sort of the American-Mexican border before it was well-defined and there were states out west. He sort of watched everybody. So he watched sort of the people that were the rangers that were some of the nasty guys, and he watched some of the Mexican bandidos, and he watched some of the Native American. He sort of saw how everybody sort of killed their prey, if you will. And so it's like, shoot, like almost any weapon in his hand, he learned at a young age that all of them can do damage. So
that sounds incredible.
And now that he's in modern times, man, what are you talking about? You give him a machine gun, woo! That'll make his day easy.
And what I love about it is going into the Old West, because the spawn kind of mythos, and that, you know, like you say, not all spawns are created equal, but a spawn in the Old West kind of does work when we go back, and because I know the book is going to go modern and back a little bit as well. Are we going to see any other either like familiar faces or familiar type characters popping up in the Old West as well?
I think the answer is yes, for some of the characters. Where, you know, I'm going to show that, you know, there's a character called Cagliostro who just converted into a new big villain called Sin, that he's been sort of pestering all the spawns throughout time. So he's going to have a past relationship with Gunslinger that he's going to go, what? That guy's still around? He's still here? Shoot. I've got a couple scores to settle with that guy. So there'll be some of that, but I think also some of the fun would just be looking and playing with history a little bit. I've purposely set it up that he gets teleported to modern times a year before the Civil War ends. So I wanted it to be that he didn't know what the result of it was. You know, he just had heard from a distance that there was a war going on, and he would know about it and maybe even have taken a side one way or the other, and then vanishes and gets pulled to the future. But the other thing too is, at least early on, because we all adapt, is that I want to play up the man out of time, right? So, I mean, this is a person 200 years out of time. Almost everything should feel new to him. Should be either surprising and or shocking. And I don't mean that there's, you know, cell phones or cars. I think just basic stuff that we don't even sort of think about, you know, which is, oh my God, that, you know, you can get a six pack of socks. in one place, like, oh my God, that was I was never able to get that. You can get frozen dinners, like, what? Oh my gosh. So just basic stuff besides technology. I want him to sort of have to adjust accordingly to the world, and I'm going to show also that this man can't read or write, so he wasn't an educated man, so that's going to be a bit of a detriment to him as he moves forward.
Yeah, those are a lot of layers that give you a lot of room to play. A few panels of Spawn sock shopping would be gold.
Right? Oh my gosh. I knew it. I knew I should have put money in Coca-Cola.
With the new universe launching and all this kind of universe building happening in other media, obviously films, and then you know, The Boys, they're spinning off stuff out of that. Have you been approached for a Spawn verse somewhere?
Not specific to what you're thinking. I've been approached by some big companies about they're in a mood to buy IP, you know, intellectual property. And obviously Marvel owns or is owned by Disney, and DC Comics are owned by Warner Brothers. It's owned by AT&T, which basically means that the door has been shut from those two big giant, you know, world sharing, you know, comic book landscapes. There's a bunch of companies that have been shut out, and those, and they're companies that everybody knows: Universal, Paramount, Sony, Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, Apple. I mean, there's another half dozen more. And that also, there's ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, all the cable channels, right? There are billion-dollar companies that need content, and so they're all swimming around. And if they look at charts, whether it's novels or video games or toys or comic books, then, you know, if they're paying attention, they're going to see the word Spawn the odd time. And so I get the phone call from some of these big companies. So, yeah.
Has any been like, have you ever been close to maybe making a deal with somebody, or are you just, holding on?
No, because I don't have a for sale sign out, right? So it's always interesting. Oh my gosh, we love your house, Todd, and we want to buy it. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? I like my house. I'm comfortable where I'm living. My family lives here, right? So, I'm not selling. Oh, comma, I'm not a saint. If you want to put a stupid number down on a piece of paper, I guess I'll move my family. So, but, you know, I haven't advanced it to that point yet. So,
and I know holding everything close, I love that you're doing that. And you're still moving forward with trying to get a new, film version of the character up. Is there any latest news on that? Are we any closer to anything, or?
A script was supposed to be delivered like about a month ago, so I'm still waiting on that, and that's gonna be a big piece of the momentum, because you either get a script that everybody involved is feeling really good about, and now it's just a matter of massaging it very quickly, or you get something that, you know, everybody looks at and goes, oh, maybe we gotta do a little bit of work on it, and then more time goes by. But hopefully I was going to make the call today to just see if anybody knew where that script was. So
I can look for it too if you need help.
We're looking to get it done. So, you know, you try to give people, you know, the creative people in the process as much time as needed, but at some point, you know, you just need to sometimes flick us creative people in the ear to make sure that we get stuff done.
And kind of not Spawn related, but Spawn adjacent. I know you started a new comic with a new hero with John Leguizamo. Who reached out to who? How did that kind of comic book partnership start?
That goes all the way back to when we were filming the original Spawn movie, I think back in 1997. And, you know, I was on set a little bit and got friendly with some of the people, and John was always a good man, and we always had a good relationship. From time to time we'd run into each other and or, you know, chit chat. So I think we were at sort of pre-pandemic, we're at the New York Comic Convention, and I was there, he was there, so we sort of got together, said hi, caught up, and he said, hey, I got this comic book idea, wouldn't it be cool, Todd, you know, can you help me sort of get this sort of launched off the ground? I got the idea, but I don't really understand comic books per se. So I went, yeah, cool, let's have a talk. So
nice and pretty. So it came together pretty easy then.
It was pretty it was pretty fully formed from what John wanted to do.
Nice. with Batman Day coming up, I wanted to ask you a little Batman question, because you've worked obviously on Batman in the past. Who's come, you know, obviously when you're drawing Batman and working on the character, you have a vision of him in your head. Who has come closest to capturing your vision of Batman on the screen or in a media form outside of comics?
Wow. Outside of comic books. In all honesty, I don't think there is one. There are more examples inside of comics than are outside. I think some of the stuff that's outside of comics is way more tame than my instincts would be, right? So, when I think of Batman, I'm not trying to sell toys and video games and t-shirts and hats. So my instinct is, oh my God, this would be an R-rated movie, right? You know, a guy puts on a dark suit and goes out and scares the shit out of the bad guys at three o'clock in the morning. Like, who doesn't admire that guy? But you get some holdbacks because, it's owned by a big corporation and, you know, you want to sell a handful of ancillary, which is good because I make the toys for DC Universe, so multiverse, which is great. So it's good business for me. But, I remember when they said, oh, we got to, you know, people have even told me in some of the movies, they go, oh, we got a Joker and he's really creepy and whatever. I go, are you out of your mind? You don't even know what the Joker in my head. Are you out of your like people would walk out of the theaters crying. if you're going to do insanity, then do insanity, right? Don't do insanity light. You know, that's not interesting to me. But but this is why you don't let the inmates run the asylum because go, well, Todd, I know you have a vision. But nobody wants to see that vision, and so we're not making any money, and we may have to let you go. I don't think you can steer the boat anymore. So I have a bent. If you're going to go dark, go dark. If you're going to go fun, then get really fun. And if you're going to go youthful, go youthful. But, you know, to try and please everybody and do a little bit of each one of them, to me, sometimes is a unsatisfying meal.
I really want to see your Joker now, like big time.
Oh, dude, it would. Like I said, you have to keep the kids away.
That's fine. Let's Kickstarter this thing. Let's figure out a way to get. Stepping away from comic books and that world for a minute, because you are also a massive sports fan, as am I, and you know you've got. A kind of world-renowned collection of baseball and other sports artifacts. Have you added anything recently that you know you're particularly proud of?
Nothing meaningful, right? I mean, it's interesting. People ask me about my collection, and it's just sort of binge and purge, where I've got some stuff that's sort of big and renowned and expensive, but most of the stuff I add to it is just. This, you know, $10, $20, $30 geeky stuff that I just want for myself because I remember I had it when I was 9. I just go, oh my gosh, I remember I had that. I'm going to buy it off eBay, right? I don't even care sometimes about the condition of it. I just want to have it back in my possession, that thing that I used to have in my youth. So, and those sometimes are just as interesting and valuable to me as some of the other big stuff, right? And then there's stuff in between. I think I have 4-5 sets on the PSA registry that are the best graded sets in, you know, on the registry for that particular set. It's not necessarily a set that people would go, oh my God, what is it, Todd? The 71 Topps baseball set? And like, no, that's 700 cards. I don't got time to do that. but I do have the best 71 Kellogg's baseball set, right? That I've got that set with the highest grade out there and a couple others that are like every one of them is a 10. And so every one's a gem mint. So I go, okay, best that can happen now, somebody can tie my set, because you're not going to beat a 10. That's it. I'm at the top of the mountain. All I can do is just get company. Nobody's ever kicking me off the mountain.
I'm kind of similar to you, like, in that respect, because I used to collect and I still have a good chunk of my collection. But, you know, you move, you lose things over years. And I'm the same way now. I'm looking for stuff that I had that I just want again. You know?
Right.
I don't know if it's the memory connection.
And you can get it for $25. It's cool.
Yeah, I know. Like, I kind of love that the bottom fell out of the card market a little bit. It's made collecting on a radio salary much easier.
Yep.
One question I wanted to add, like, because, you know, Spawn definitely lives in a world a little bit of horror, and deals with some, yeah, you know, demonic type things. Have you ever had a ghostly type experience?
No. And it's interesting because I've met a lot of people who do horror, and people think, like, somehow they're demented, you know, pedophiles or something like that, that are in a corner. And it's like, how could you think of this horrible stuff that you guys come up with? But to a person, they're all very kind, gentle people. And when they show their movies, let's say, in a theater room, they like to be at the back, because when they get to what they call the popcorn moment, which scares people so the popcorn goes flying, when they get to those moments and it happens, they sort of giggle like little girls, because they're like, ha, 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 I scared people. And so we're I'd say that we're far more immature with our horror, because it's just, we just like to scare people. I mean, we probably all did it in our youth with our moms and stuff, where we come around the corner and try and go, boo. If we could get them to jump, right? So it's not true malice. It's just being silly. I was a kid when I grew up, wanted to put a frog in people's pants to see if they would react to it. And if you didn't, I'd walk away sort of frustrated, and then I'd drop the frog in somebody else's pants until I found somebody that would react, and then I'd keep dropping frogs in their pants. which basically were my two brothers. One I could poke in the rib and he'd do nothing. The other one would just go crazy. And so guess which one I kept poking the most in my youth? The one that went crazy, because I got a reaction out of it. So doing horror is just, you know, just coming. I mean, it's weird because people go, oh my God, that serial killer, it's ridiculous. Here's the thing when you're creating characters. You're not advocating for any one character, right? I mean, but if you're going to write a story about any character with any position or standing in society, good, bad, or indifferent, you better make him convincing. So if you're going to write a cop, he should act and sound like a cop. You're going to do a doctor, then they should act and sound like a doctor. And if you're going to do a mafia guy, then they should act accordingly. And if you're going to do a psychotic killer, they should act like one. So, again, I'm not advocating to be any of the above, right? I'm not saying when I write a story about a doctor, you should all be doctors, because I'm writing a story. I'm not writing a story to advocate for it. I'm just writing a story that happens to have a doctor in it, just like I'm happening to write a story that happens to have a maniac in it. I'm not saying become a maniac. I'm just saying it's a story about a maniac, and I'm glad that he bugs you enough. That means I wrote a convincing maniac. That's our job as creators, to create convincing characters. Good on us.
Yeah, and you know what? I totally get, like, when I was a kid, obviously I'm not a writer, but when I was a kid and you get those English assignments of writing stories, I always used to, like, write horror. And part of it was the reaction of the teacher. One of the teachers I had was a nun. I really used to like writing horror for her.
Oh, yes. Yes. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? I do toys, and I do a lot of creepy toys. And then from time to time, I get criticism from, you know, groups of, you know, and a lot of them are mothers and whatever else. And it's like, you know, we think these are horrible and whatever. And it's like, they're horrible because I'm not trying to sell them to you. I'm trying to sell them to your 17-year-old kid. And, oh, by the way, for the most part, he's male. And it's like, You think there's a world in which your 17-year-old son wants to collect something that he can share the moment and collect with his mother? Like, what are you talking about? That's a serial killer in the making. So, no. Your kid not only wants to collect stuff that will offend you, he's going to dress and listen to music and color his hair and tattoo himself and put piercings in him. So that also sort of irritates you, because eventually he's going to fly the nest here pretty quick. He's at year 17, and he's just prepping to fly the nest, right? Don't worry about it. It's like, you don't have to like everything that's in the world, Mom. It's not all aimed at you, Mom. There's stuff, some stuff that's not aimed for you. Call of Duty wasn't designed for bingo moms. Got to tell you, sorry to break your heart, it wasn't designed for you, right? It was designed for other people that aren't bingo moms, right? And that's still a lot of people.
Yeah, and the toys are, I love your twisted and demented toys. I've got quite a collection of them. Question for you on those. Keep them in the package, or are you a take them out of the package guy?
I'm a let every individual do what keeps them happy in the world kind of person. So I long ago figured out that my name's Todd, only rhymes with God. I only have control for one person, and that's me. So I get up every day and I go, Todd, what would make you happy? And I just do it. And if I get a lot of criticism for it, I'm still going to do it. And if I get a lot of praise for it, I'm still going to do it. Right. So either side of that coin, I hate to say it, I don't really pay much heed to it. Luckily, there's enough people that support what I do, which is all that I look for when I put anything out into the world. Is I cross my fingers and go, man, I just need enough of them to buy that so I can do it again tomorrow. And I don't get hooked on, especially as I've gotten older, I don't get hooked on whether everybody likes it or dislikes it, because in the scope of things, it doesn't matter. I'll put it in perspective for everybody. If I put something out there and every single one of the fans that I've ever dealt with says they love it, and I take all that number of people and I take that and I put it up against the total population of the globe and round that percentage to the nearest full number, it's zero. 0%. Now, if I get everybody, if I put the same thing out and everybody hates what I do and they want to criticize me, then I'm going to be at zero. So on my best and my worst day, I'm still at zero, right? So it's like one doesn't matter over the other. So I might as well just do what I enjoy and hope that enough people will go for a ride. And luckily, I've been able to pull that trick for over 30 years now. So
I love that life philosophy, and I am adopting it from now on.
Yeah, we're all zeros. Get over it. Get over it. So. I mean, like, look at if I was, you know, Princess Di or Michael Jordan, then maybe I got 3% of the globe, you know. But I got 0% of it on my best day, so no big deal.
I love it. I'm making that a T-shirt. We're all zeros. Love it.
Yeah.
And that kind of answered the last question I wanted to hit you with a little bit. I didn't know how long I had you for. So, when you were starting out writing and drawing, you know, obviously you're submitting packages, and obviously part of that is rejection. And I wanted to know, like, how did you handle that, and what do you pass on to people that are trying to do a creative venture now that so many people are trying to do it from home? Like, what do you kind of tell people? And I guess it's the zero philosophy.
There's a lot of immaturity. There's a fine line between delusion and tenacity, right? So I ended up with over 250 rejections over the years, right? And people go, oh my God, Todd, look at you. You just kept going. You wouldn't take no for an answer. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. But here's the thing. In hindsight, those 250 no's were absolutely correct, because I remember what I was sending in. And if I was looking at that same batch today with a professional eye, I would have said no also. So at what point do you just go, no, I'm going to keep driving? And another point do you just go, you're just not good enough. Look, I can try all I want to be an opera singer. I don't know. If after 500 rejections, is it tenacity or is it just stupidity and delusion? Like, you're never going to be an opera singer, Todd. You just don't have the gig, the goods to go with it. So, but luckily I was stubborn enough to just go, oh yeah. And I also, my dad was in the printing business. I was just going to make my own comics with my dad's help, and print them myself if I had to. So I had a plan B, but, before I had to get to that extreme, I got my first phone call from Marvel Comic Books, and they said, all right, we'll give you a 10-page trial and see what you do. And it was sort of the beginning of me sort of tricking my way into the comic book industry.
We are so glad he tricked his way in. What a pleasure to talk with him. I'm sure we will have him on again. There's so much more to talk to him about. Thank you so much for listening this week. And don't forget, spread the word, tell your friends. And until we chat again, have a great week.